Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Religious liberty issues seem always to be right on the front pages of our newspapers and right on the agenda of our courts, local, state, and federal. Just today, the Department of Justice of the United States has released a report on the enforcement of laws protecting religious freedom covering fiscal years 2001 to 2006. The Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez, personally announced the release of this report and did so when speaking to a group of Southern Baptists in Nashville, Tennessee. He's right here. He's in the building, and he is intending to come by for a conversation with us briefly. And so we're going to be ready to interrupt our flow of conversation at any point for the Attorney General of the United States, expected here in the studio momentarily. So while we're waiting and looking forward to that conversation, let me just tell you that the report itself is fascinating. When you look at this report entitled Enforcement of Laws Protecting Religious Freedom, you come to understand that there are so many issues covering a waterfront of religious liberty concerns that there's almost no way anybody but the Department of Justice of the United States could kind of get a comprehensive grasp of all of this. The report covers education, employment, housing, and lending discrimination, public accommodations and public facilities, land use, the rights of institutionalized persons, crimes against persons and property based on religion, and et cetera. Also, the role of the Department of Justice, both in being a litigant and in filing amicus curiae, that is, friend of the court briefs, where it has an interest. What I find absolutely fascinating is just how detailed many of these cases really are. When you're looking at religious liberty here, you're looking, for instance, at needs of children in public schools, of persons in the workplace. In the public schools, for example, just consider how diverse these issues are. The first category of concern was harassment based on religion. And according to this report, the most common problem addressed in the Civil Rights Division's cases related to religious liberty involved complaints of indifference by schools to student-on-student religious harassment. This kind of harassment has to do with such things as happened in Cape Helopen, Delaware, where a fourth-grade Muslim student filed a complaint that she had been harassed by her teacher about her faith in front of her class. She was ridiculed because her mother wore a headscarf. The student was repeatedly harassed by students, missed several weeks of school, and that's one of the cases in which the Department of Justice jumped in and said that is illegitimate. The court and the government was very clear that the school district had a responsibility to protect a student from that kind of harassment. The second largest number of cases involved religious expression. According to the report, these cases have involved speech related to two different contexts. The first is students who are speaking outside any organized school activity. You know, in other words, if a group of high school students are given an opportunity to relate to other students, they have to be given the freedom to express a Christian message if they have a right to have any other student-initiated message. The case that the Department of Justice indicated here as being of interest was of some high school boys who were handing out candy canes to students with religious messages attached. In this case, a court decision came down ruling that the students' First Amendment rights had been violated. The second big issue here is where school-sponsored non-curricular expressive activities discriminate against religion. Now, this again can be very interesting. Let's say that there's a performance where students have the opportunity in a concert to sing a song. If a student has a right to sing a song about whatever the student may choose, you can't say the student can't choose a song about her Christian faith or her Jewish experience or whatever. The third category deals with schools that deny religious groups access to school facilities after hours on an equal basis with other groups. This goes back to the very famous Mergen's decision handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court, known as equal access. And it's very important that Christian parents and Christian citizens and Christian students are aware of what the equal access legislation provides. And that means that if student groups have a right to form themselves and to meet on school facilities after or before hours, if the students get to establish what the group's about, and it can be about a hobby or an interest or some kind of common cause, there can be no discrimination against schools that the students, against groups that the students would form having to do with their own religious convictions, be they Christian, Jewish, evangelical, Catholic, you name it. Another category of big issues before the court and before the Department of Justice had to do when students claimed that they were excluded from higher educational opportunities because of their beliefs. Now, this is a particular interest to me because we've covered this on the program. A professor, for instance, at Texas Tech University who said he would not send on recommendations for students for graduate study if they did not say they believed in the theory of evolution. Now, let's think about that for a moment. It didn't say that they had to be able to articulate it, to explain it, to pass a test about the knowledge of it. Rather, this particular professor said they had to say that they believed in the theory of evolution. Well, I find it very, very interesting. I hope you do, too, that the Department of Justice of the United States of America decided that that was a religious issue, a violation of religious freedom. Another category of cases the Department of Justice took up consisted of investigations in which students are denied the right to wear religious head coverings at school. Now, fascinatingly, you remember this is a big controversy in some European countries. In France, the idea of what it means to be French in a common culture was the cause of the French government deciding that Muslim students, for example, could wear no specific headgear, no head coverings. When I was at Columbia University in New York City earlier this year debating these issues, it was interesting that not only did you have Muslim students who wanted to wear such headgear, but you also had Orthodox Jewish students who either all the time or at particular times also felt the need and the responsibility given their tradition to wear a head covering. This is an issue that is documented, and I find very interesting the fact that the Department of Justice now has up a website in which there are particular pictures offered of representative headgear and with the idea that this is protected. Posters and internet-based materials are to help law enforcement officials, school administrators, and others determine what really is and is not covered by religious liberty. Lastly, there were cases in which students were denied excused absences for religious holidays. Now, let's think about that for just a moment. It's very easy for Christians to overlook how this just might impinge upon the rights of others. Just because of the sheer numbers of Christians in America, you can pretty much count on the fact there's going to be no school on Christmas Day. No school on particular days. Easter following a resurrection day, falling on a Sunday, really doesn't count. But there are no doubt many holidays that non-Christians might need to celebrate with all-day religious observance that Christians might not understand. But the Department of Justice, rightly remembering that if religious freedom is for one or for some, it must be for all, has protected the rights of these students. Once such things are determined to be actual bona fide holidays related to their faith, to have an excused absence. That doesn't mean they don't have to make up the work. It does mean that the school can't simply say, we don't recognize your holiday. Lastly, in the public schools, it does mention that scholarships toward education at religiously affiliated schools also come up because case by case, state by state, district by district, these issues also come up where, again, my argument would be what I believe the Department of Justice's argument now is, that the student should have the choice. And once the student has made the choice, you have no right to revoke the scholarship just because of the particular school the student has chosen to attend. Other issues covered in this massive report, and it's fascinating, have to do with housing and lending discrimination, have to do with employment issues, public accommodations and public facilities. But I have to tell you, one of the big ones of greatest controversy is land use, because across this country, one of the ways that churches are finding their ministries curtailed is by zoning and planning authorities in local communities who say churches are going to be treated differently than other commercial enterprises or other organizations or other nonprofits. And they come and say, look, if you're going to build a shopping mall, we'll give you incentives. If you're going to build some kind of public facility, we'll give you incentives. You can do this, you can do that. But if you're going to build a church, you're going to have to build it in this less desirable part of town, even if you own property where you want to put your church. You're not going to be able to put this large a building there because we're going to conscribe you and limit you in a way we would not limit other facilities. When you look at the scope of this report, there's a reminder to us that we live in a very complicated age. We live in an age in which, well, it takes dozens and hundreds of court cases a year to settle a lot of these issues. And when you're looking, for instance, just at land use, there are all kinds of local, state, and federal issues and interests that might come into conflict. Under Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, the Department of Justice of the United States has taken a pretty aggressive stand on behalf of these religious liberty issues. That's why he is here in Nashville addressing the Executive Committee of the Southern Baptist Convention on this issue. And we hope there's time in his schedule as he is wrapping up his remarks upstairs to come by and bring a report. I had an opportunity to meet with the Attorney General earlier this afternoon, found him to be a charming and insightful man, and one who obviously is very committed to the defense of religious liberty. That should be good news to Americans. Should also be a reminder to us that some kind of continual vigilance is necessary. I think one of the big issues this raises in my mind is the fact that we as Christians sometimes are more attentive to our own religious liberties than the liberties of others. But if we're really going to claim these liberties for ourselves, we have to understand they belong to all Americans. I'd love to know what you think about that. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast. Broadcasting live from Nashville, Tennessee. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The Attorney General is still speaking. We'll be waiting to see if he has the opportunity to step in the studio here where he is expected. In the meantime, I want to tell you about a case in the St. Louis area that kind of gets at the heart of what we're talking about here. And this is published in yesterday's edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It seems that at the University of Missouri, there is a new fraternity known as Beta Upsilon Chi. It is known by its acronym BUCKS, or BYX. And in this case, it is a fraternity of young men who are committed Christians. This is a particular fraternity for those who are very clear, young men, about their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Thus, it is a Christian fraternity, and yes, it does discriminate. You believe it or not, this is a Christian fraternity in which you have to be a Christian in order to belong. Now, this became an issue of controversy at the University of Missouri, and as it turned out, the University of Missouri was under a lot of pressure not to recognize this group, none as brothers under Christ. The group had actually been required by the university, or the university had demanded that Brothers Under Christ, in order to have anything to do with the University of Missouri, would have to adopt the university's non-discrimination policy. The non-discrimination policy of the university is very, very clear. It, in fact, is pretty comprehensive. It says the university does not discriminate, quote, relative to race, religion, color, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, age, disability, or status as a Vietnam-era veteran, end quote. Now, I've read a lot of these, folks. That's longer than most. But nonetheless, when it does include religion, the obvious demand of the university was that Brothers Under Christ could be brothers, but not under Christ. Now, interestingly, you had pressure brought on here. You had legal action taken by the Christian Legal Society, and the university backed down. But one of the issues that has arisen out of this is the fact that fraternities and sororities discriminate all the time. I mean, here you have a group of organizations, both male and female, fraternities and sororities, and in their documents they have to publish the university's non-discrimination guideline. But anyone who knows anything about the modern university culture and knows anything about fraternities and sororities knows that discrimination is the very name of the game. They are choosing with whom they wish to associate. And the University of Missouri basically had to back down because they didn't have much to stand on here when it comes to suggesting that other groups can discriminate on whatever basis they may choose but not acknowledge. But Brothers Under Christ would be prohibited from discriminating very, very visibly and honestly on the basis that as a fraternity of Christian brothers, they expected members to be Christians. Neil Richards, a professor of constitutional law at Washington University Law School, that's in St. Louis, said that the whole existence of Christian fraternities at state universities is, quote, a complicated issue. He went on to say this is the right to associate with like-minded people versus the rights of equal access. But universities, for better or worse, allow fraternities and sororities to discriminate. Now, this is just an example of the kind of real-life complication, challenge, perhaps even curtailment of religious liberty that we all have to be concerned about. Because if this university, University of Missouri, is allowed to discriminate on this basis, saying that this Christian organization cannot be recognized if it continued to be Christian, then you would really have religious liberty curtailed not only at the University of Missouri, but wherever that precedent would spread to other areas of the country. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. perhaps given your own experience with one of these controversies over religious liberty. Perhaps you've had a child who's been told the child cannot sing a particular song or post a particular message or turn in an assignment with a particular piece of Christian art because you've been told separation of church and state means you can't do that. Perhaps you're part of a church that's found its ability to build or relocate or expand limited by zoning laws that would not apply if the church were a corporate enterprise or a shopping mall or an auto repair shop. Perhaps you've been in another situation, perhaps your own employment situation, in which you've seen this kind of thing happen. Just remember, we were talking about British Airways just a matter of weeks ago. Big controversy in which I was interviewed by the BBC and appeared in the British press talking about the fact that they told a Christian that she could not wear a cross around her neck and a discreet piece of jewelry, even though they allowed Sikhs to wear headdresses. And, you know, at least British Airways has also backed down. But you just have to wonder, how long will they continue to back down from this kind of discrimination? At the same time, I wouldn't act like all these issues are simple. I wouldn't insinuate that at all. But they must be fairly adjudicated with constitutional rights for all Americans protected. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, this whole idea of a Christian fraternity or a Christian sorority I find very interesting. I was not a member of a fraternity in college. I didn't have that experience. But, you know, there is something about the bonding that takes place there. There's something about the camaraderie, obviously, that takes place within the fraternity environment. Not always for good. Anyone who has an acquaintance of what goes on in a lot of these would know it can bring out the very worst in some, the worst behavior in both males and females. A recent book out was having to do with sororities, showing how it leads to a very vicious culture in many cases among young women on college campuses. And then about the fraternities. And, you know, how many stories do we get about fraternities being shut down for violent, abusive behavior or even illegal behavior in various universities? If you've read Tom Wolfe's novel, I Am Charlotte Simmons, you have a pretty good idea of what's going on here. But the idea of a Christian fraternity is kind of setting the whole thing on its head. What if you had a group of young men who did not bring out the worst in each other, but tried to bring out the very best, who did not give themselves to debauchery and pornography and drunkenness and the kind of things that go on with the hooking up culture of the American university, but rather gave themselves to prayer and devotion and evangelism and the kind of things that Christian young men know that Christian young men ought to do? I would argue there could be a lot of potential there. I find it encouraging that a movement and an organization known as BUCKS, that's for the Greek, underneath the name Brothers for Christ, I find it encouraging that such a group would exist. I find it discouraging that universities would find this to be a problem rather than a benefit. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a town long familiar with the quest for freedom, where Mark's on the line listening to XM170. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to hear your comment about in the corporate world how we can't really call it Christmas anymore. It's, you know, holiday and in schools too, where Christ is being taken out of Christmas, and there's really nothing we can do about it. I don't know what you thought about that.
Mark, let me ask you a question. Are you in your own experience or in the experience of others with whom you're familiar, have you ever actually been told you can't say Merry Christmas at work, or is it more of a kind of peer pressure against it?
It's definitely, you know, Fortune 500 companies can't come out and say you can't say Merry Christmas, but, you know, the managers inadvertently or purposely, you know, frown upon that and want us to say Happy Holidays or something to that effect.
Yeah, Mark, that's a very helpful call. I appreciate it. You know, one of the things that happens where religious liberty is often curtailed is exactly what Mark's talking about here. Not just an official policy, but the kind of suggestive word that comes from a supervisor. I mean, because here is how so many of these things work. If you want to get promoted, if you want to get the good job evaluation, if you want to have the chance at that next job, which you've got your eye on up the ladder, you don't want in your job envelope, in your employment file, that you were a troublemaker refusing to say Happy Holidays and instead insisting on saying Merry Christmas. The same kind of pressure, by the way, comes on so much of the homosexual activism, where if in the cubicle you refuse to put up the gay pride thing for Gay Pride Week, you get written up as being uncooperative. There's a curtailment of religious liberty. but it's rather disguised, isn't it? Maybe more dangerous because it is disguised. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it is very interesting to consider that these new cases dealing with religious liberty just come up all the time. From yesterday, I was just handed this press release having to do with word release just yesterday, having to do with Miami, Florida. Miami-Dade County officials have told two Christian groups that they have to buy 2.5 acres and get a conditional use permit in order to hold a prayer meeting. Or a Bible study. One of these is a group known as the International Outreach Center. The other is the Worldwide Agape Ministries. The Outreach Center has been holding a Bible study, prayer, discussion, and singing religious songs in a facility. They're now told that even if they have just two or three people, they're going to have 2.5 acres. Now, can you imagine any other group being told this? What I find even more egregious is the order that was given to the Worldwide Agape Ministries, described as a small home-based religious ministry, where they meet for prayer, Bible reading, and discussion. They've received a cease and desist order from county zoning officials, even though all this means is that in a house there are two or three people who are gathering for this purpose. Now, as the litigants in these cases are pointing out, you know, you can get many more times that many people to watch a football game, to have a poker game. I suppose that's legal in a lot of places, or to do whatever. Just don't pray. Now, what kind of zoning law could possibly withstand constitutional muster in which you would have everything permitted except prayer and Bible study? This almost sounds like a draconian police state, but in this case, it's Miami-Dade County, Florida. Now, before we jump to any conclusion about where this might end, let's remember that this is an ongoing case, and let's hope that cooler and saner heads prevail. But this is another reminder to us that there are groups like the American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLJ, and the Alliance Defense Fund, ADF, without whom we would have a lot less protection on these issues because they are out there actively watching this kind of development in order to make sure that religious liberties are protected. And that's also why it's very important that in Washington we have in the federal government a Department of Justice that is attuned to these issues. Let me just get to the report released today, the section on land use. I think you'll find this very interesting. Just remember the case I just mentioned, just off the press. Long after this report was printed, even before the Attorney General just came here to Nashville to release the report, came this word out of Miami-Dade, Florida. Now, let me read to you from the report that was released today. It says here that Congress compiled what it termed massive evidence of widespread discrimination against religious institutions by state and local officials in land use decisions. Thus, Congress in the year 2000 adopted and passed the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, known as RLUIPA. This particular act says that religious organizations, not just Christian, but religious organizations, regardless of form and conviction, cannot be discriminated against with zoning rules that wouldn't apply to any other similar group. You know, if the Elks Club or the Moose Club or the Honorable Order of the whatever can have an assembly and a building and a facility, under this set of rules, you can't change it just because what's going to be taking place in that same hall would be prayer, Bible study, hymn singing, etc. And you would think this would be obvious. I think, again, this just comes back again and again. You would think this would be obvious. You would think that in America it wouldn't be possible that this kind of complication would ensue. But here it is. And we have the case of this Christian fraternity in St. Louis. And, again, before we jump to litigation, let's remember that once lawyers got into this on behalf of these students, the university backed down. But had the students not called those lawyers, you can pretty much count on the fact that the answer would have been no to the Christian fraternity. This situation in Miami-Dade still unfolding. We will see where it goes. Just handed another press release from Missouri saying that officials in St. Charles County, Missouri, had been trying to say that there could be no voluntary Bible study taking place in the county courthouse because, again, they were claiming it's a violation of the separation of church and state, but the American Council for Law and Justice is coming back saying, look, if they were doing anything other than praying, no one would say there's a problem. It's voluntary, citizen-initiated action. It's not the state sponsoring a prayer meeting. It's just people who are there who are doing this. All right, the phone number again, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There's still time for you to call. I'd love to hear what you are dealing with in your particular area and what you think of the fact that the Department of Justice of the United States government is itself involved in this kind of issue. Are you encouraged by that? It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that we have to have one part of our government trying to run interference and protect us from other parts of our government. But government is now such a huge reality in our lives, so many different levels, so many different laws. We're really in a situation in which if we do not have this kind of protection from the Department of Justice, we have to wonder just how vulnerable we might be. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Live from Nashville, Tennessee, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. I honestly believe this is the fastest hour in the day. It just goes so quickly. We still got time for you to call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Flemington, New Jersey, where Justin's on the line. Listen on XM170. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, hi. Just in regards to universities in a Christian ministry, I think it's wonderful that young Christians want to congregate like that, but there's plenty of churches and ministries that they could start that wouldn't necessarily have to be recognized as a fraternity. So I think the purpose is great, but there's lots of avenues to accomplish the same thing without necessarily having to be recognized by the university.
Yeah, that's a good point, Justin. In fact, I want to take it just a step further and say the most important issue for a young man in university ought to be the church to which he's connected rather than the fraternity. For Christians, that's far more important. Our first responsibility is to be active disciples in the context of the local church. I do want to defend their right, however, to have this kind of group on the campus because the visibility of it is itself a form of Christian witness. And I think that's one of the big reasons these guys are doing these things. I've talked to some who've been involved in the Brothers for Christ fraternity chapters elsewhere. And it really is a big visibility on the campus that I think can be used for good Christian witness. And for that reason, I want to defend their right to do this. But, Justin, you're exactly right. In the grand scheme of things, their church involvement is far more important. And let me turn the tables on that one, too, since you've given me the opportunity. And that is to say, there are an awful lot of wonderful evangelical churches that just ignore opportunities to minister to college and university students all around them. When I go from city to city, I'm sometimes just amazed as I'm on a university campus. I find out there's no church, there's no evangelical church that has a very substantial ministry or impact on these campuses. You know, I wonder, what do they think they're doing? I mean, Paul had to go to Mars Hill for an awful lot of our churches. Mars Hill's across the street or, right across town. Justin, thank you so much for your call. There's still time for you to call and join 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've talked especially about some of the most controversial issues that they hit our awareness on the religious liberty front. Certainly what goes on in the public schools, it seems like a huge avalanche of issues. You know, they seem to come in waves. Christmas seems to bring on an entire wave of these cases. But also another one's coming up. Just get ready. Every commencement season, all kinds of challenges. What if the valedictorian wants to thank Jesus Christ for what the Lord's meant in her life? And she's told she can't mention Jesus Christ in a prayer. Well, in a speech, if she could mention, Franklin Delano Roosevelt or Gandhi or anyone else, it's invidious discrimination, legally defined, if she is told she can't mention Jesus Christ. But I guarantee you there are an awful lot of school officials out there who are so allergic, and for that matter, frightened to be charged with violating the separation of church and state, as it's often described, they'll overreact on this. You know, during the athletic season, especially in a lot of towns and communities, you have voluntary prayer before high school football games. And then a lot of places are being told you can't do it. But again, if it's student-initiated, it's not school-initiated, if it's citizen-initiated, and if everyone else has the opportunity also to pray, not just evangelical Christians, but Roman Catholics, Jews, Muslims, whoever, then it's hard to see how you could discriminate, saying any speech is permissible except religious speech. Well, folks, when you start looking at these issues, you also realize that it would take the wisdom of Solomon to figure some of these things out. I do have sympathy for the courts, as so many of these courts are simply inundated with cases from one side or the other. But the courts also deserve an awful lot of the blame, because especially the U.S. courts of appeal across this country, you have precedents set that are almost directly at odds with each other. And then by the time it ends up at the U.S. Supreme Court, there's so much invested in how this case will come out. Again, it would take the wisdom of Solomon to figure some of these things out in terms of what exactly is fair and what is right. But let's just remember that when it gets to the Supreme Court, you don't always get a decision that makes any sense either. Just take the Ten Commandments cases, one from Kentucky, one from Texas. We talked about this on the program. The Supreme Court said yes to one and no to the other in such a convoluted line of reasoning that the Supreme Court of the United States basically has thrown the entire country into confusion. Now, eventually, this may take some kind of clarification, not only through Congress in terms of the instruction through legislation, but also through the people who finally say, through a constitutional process, this is just too confusing. We're going to have to be much more clear about what is permissible and is not permissible. The Attorney General of the United States is here in Nashville releasing this report known as Report on Enforcement of Laws Protecting Religious Freedom. Still in a press conference, even as we are here on the air. I would suggest you want to go to the website of the U.S. Department of Justice, and if you want some fodder for thinking, want to think through how many of these cases actually come about and what kind of challenges to religious freedom are out there, you can go to the Department of Justice's website, which is simply www.doj.gov, and there you'll find a link to this. If it's not up now, I'm told it will be in a matter of hours. Certainly overnight you'll be able to get this report, download it, and read it for yourself. While we're thinking about what's going on in the world, let me just tell you something about what's coming up over the next week. This next few days is going to be very interesting. On Thursday, we're going to have a conversation with Susan Jacoby. Susan Jacoby and I were involved in a debate just today, online debate, at the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine, having to do with the question, has organized religion done more harm than good? Ms. Jacoby is the author of a book entitled Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism, and she is pretty clear in her argument that she thinks, on the whole, religion's done more harm than good. I had to come back and say, I'm not here to defend religion, I'm here to speak for Christianity. But here's why I believe the answer to that has to be very, very different. We had a fascinating chat, if you want to call it a chat, debate, some would call it that, online and at my website at albertmuller.com. I've provided a link so that you can find your way right to that transcript and find out what you think. I was frustrated that we could not say more in that limited amount of time. And that's one of the reasons why we've invited Ms. Jacoby on the program, and she's coming. And so just mark your calendars. Thursday afternoon ought to be very, very interesting. We will continue the debate we began at the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine online, and we'll have, one of America's most well-known and articulate secularists on the program for a fascinating discussion. On Friday, we're going to be discussing the cover story in Time magazine this week on crisis pregnancy centers. Again, I published a major article on that issue and provided links overnight. You can find it at albertmuller.com. It ought to tell you a whole lot that Time magazine has felt the need to put crisis pregnancy centers on the front cover of the magazine's national edition. That's encouraging to me, because that cover story would not be there if the magazine and its editors did not think that crisis pregnancy centers are a big story. You want to know one of the reasons they think that? Here's something that should encourage you. There are now far more crisis pregnancy centers opposed to abortion trying to help women in this country than there are abortion clinics. Maybe, after all, there is a tide that is turning. We have to hope so and pray so. We'll be talking about that on Friday. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This is Albert Mueller. Very quickly, we have Dan calling from International Falls, Minnesota. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. I was listening to your program and very interested in what you had to say. And Part of what I guess I would want to bring to your attention or to your listeners is that what we really need, of course, in our country is we need revival. And the other thing we need is we need accountability for our leaders, especially that particular branch of government that seems to be making the decisions concerning the issues that you're raising on your program today. And, of course, that's our judicial branch. We have a federal system where they're appointed by life. There are some question whether or not that's such a great idea when you can have such divergent opinions, you know, on the same case. I don't know if I mentioned to you, I am an attorney, and I've been practicing for a number of years now, and the fact that I've been before court and many different judges, there some very good, some maybe less than good, just compels me to say that we need accountability in our judicial branch of government. And I think if we had that, judges would be less inclined to go out and step outside of their judicial boundaries, which is to apply the law, not rewrite it.
Good point, Dan. And, you know, when you read the Federalist Papers, which are really the best commentary on understanding what was behind the formation of the Constitution, the kind of debates that that framed the what became the U.S. Constitution, it is interesting that the courts, in this case the Supreme Court, was established as a way of protecting persons who would sit on the bench from what they considered undue political influence. Well, Dan, I'm basically in agreement with you, because I think what we did inadvertently was we protected them from almost any political influence, which means also public accountability. And once you're appointed to one of these judicial seats and you hold it for life in the federal court system, you know, what really does anyone have to hold against you? The only alternative would be impeachment. And that for moral reasons and legal reasons, that, you know, in terms of misbehavior, and that's just not likely to happen. And by the way, I know of one case in which it happened, and an impeached federal judge is now sitting in Congress as a member of Congress. So we're living in very, very strange times. Thank you for joining me today for this conversation on religious liberty. It's not so much about politics, even though the issue is inherently political when you have to actually get down to the making of laws and the making decisions. It's not just legal, even though it's inherently legal when it comes down to litigation, court decisions, and all the rest. A lot of it has to do with how we understand our responsibility for Christian witness. And we better understand that if we allow Christian speech, including evangelistic speech, including witness to the gospel, to be conscribed, we do great injury to our ability to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm sorry we do not have the Attorney General with us today. He just had to leave urgently, but nonetheless, I'm glad we were able to talk about this program and this report that he released today. I'll meet you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday, live from Nashville, Tennessee. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.